my daughter and I kind of looked at each other and said, we can't be quiet about this. Because if we are quiet about this, we're not going to help anyone.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Enough, Stopping the Mental Health Stigma. Today, we are going to be focusing on mental health, specifically anxiety and depression. My name is Nick Winnenberg, and I am going to be one of the co-hosts of this podcast with On Brand Studios. I'm sitting here with Tanya. Tanya, do you introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Tanya Schaefer. I am co-owner of Hope Restored Counseling Services in Loveland. I also teach at Xavier University, and I'm on the Ohio Counseling, Social Work, and Marriage and Family Therapist Board.
Awesome. We're also joined today with Tori. Tori, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Tori Morrison, and I am a parent of a child who committed suicide.
Gotcha. Now, looking at the topic matter, and this is enough stopping the mental health stigma. Is there a stigma around mental health?
Yes,
100%.
And what is that stigma?
Nobody wants to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, right. Nobody wants to talk. They want to shy away from you if you bring it up. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, if we talk about it, then someone else is going to think that they should do that, which is the silliest thing I've ever heard. If you mm-hmm. talk about that you robbed a bank, it doesn't make me want to go rob a bank.
It might well, make I me.
Well,
does it not for you? But okay, gotcha.
But, you know, I mean, that's the kind of silly thing that we deal with, mm-hmm. is that if we talk about the fact that my son committed suicide, in any way, we're quote unquote glorifying it and going to make other kids want to do it. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard.
It's just not the case.
No.
Now, what do you think the stigma started?
No idea. I don't really know.
I personally think that no one wants to admit that their child has a problem. No one wants to admit that, and I shouldn't just say child, no one wants to admit that their family member has a problem, because that may possibly mean that they failed in some way. Mm-hmm. Did I fail because my son committed suicide? And I think that's where, if Tanya has a client and she tells those parents, hey, I really think your child needs some help, I think a lot of reactions from parents is, oh, no, no, no. You can't be, my child's fine. My child, you know, there's nothing, there's no problem. And that's that stigma of, I'm going to look less in other people's eyes because A, am I not doing my job for my child? B, is my child not good enough? Whatever these things are. And I'm here to tell you that I did my job to the best that anyone could do their job. And I know that a lot of these other parents did as well. My child did everything, you know, and it still wasn't enough. I've looked back. It's only been a year and a half. I've looked back. I could not have loved that child more than I did. My husband could not have loved that child more than he did. He had two sisters that loved him, three nieces and a nephew, extended family. We're almost all here in town, local.
Tanya, do you see this a lot with different patients?
Yes. I mean, we are in our practice often assessing for suicide. I think Tori's perspective is interesting because, no, I don't think I've ever had a parent say anything like that to me, that this would be a reflection on me. But I have had parents who are resistant to take their child to the emergency room when I've assessed them, and they have a plan, or they have been thinking about it for quite a long time. And the parent may say to me, well, this is for attention. And I will say, but what if it's not? Mm-hmm. What if it's not for attention and you walk in and find them dead?
Right.
So what do you typically say to parents? Like, how do you have that conversation?
Every situation is different. It kind of depends on the age of the child and, you know, how my relationship is with the family, I guess. I mean, I've had someone come in for a first session, and I don't think that the mom was expecting that to come up. And I assessed the teenage girl, and she was suicidal, had a plan, and I strongly suggested, encouraged her to take her to children's ER, and I don't know that she did. I never saw them again.
Wow. I mean, it's such a mind-boggling. Now, again, I have no experience in mental health space, but if my son broke his leg, I'm taking him to the hospital.
Correct.
Right? So why is there a difference with that, right? And then how do we get past that as a society?
I think part of it is if your son has a broken leg, you can see it's broken. You can't always see mental health issues.
So as a parent, a concerned parent, because, I mean, all parents should be concerned about this. I know that was 23%, I think, was the last statistic that I saw, of kids have at one point thought about suicide in their life, right? I mean, so, I mean, at that perspective, as parents, we should all be, this should be forethought on our minds. So what can we do as parents to be looking for those signs? Are there signs? Are there unified? Is there a unified textbook of things to look out for?
Well, I sigh because I think in my training and my experience, we are taught a variety of signs. But I know from spending a lot of time with Tori that she has a different perspective on those signs.
I get very angry when we talk about signs. The logical part of me knows that those signs do help. You know, when there's this list of signs to look out for, I know that there are situations where that helps. My situation had no signs, not one. And I think that you'll find a lot of parents in that same situation as me. We were blindsided. I had no idea. No idea whatsoever. I would have never told you that my child was suffering from any kind of anxiety, depression, anything. And to this day, I still don't know how long he was suffering, what he was suffering from, and I'll never know. And that's really difficult as a parent because you do feel like either A, your child was suffering for years and you as a mom didn't know, mm-hmm. or B, was it just a rash decision instantly at that one moment in time? I find that hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very hard to think that he was suffering for years and I didn't know.
Right.
It's difficult. Mm-hmm.
So let's back up a little bit. As much as you're comfortable with, do you mind telling us your story?
So yeah, Ben was, he graduated from Loveland in 2020. He was a 3-year varsity sport athlete in football and lacrosse. Played freshman year of basketball and then he was done. Well liked by his friends. Never once in his history bullied. He just didn't care. He just, I mean, quite frankly, that's, you know, if someone would have said something to him, he would have been like, I just don't care, you know, say what you want. Didn't care about social media. He had Snapchat and those things, but that was just to talk to his friends. It wasn't like he really obsessed about it or like the fears that you have with girls and, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Not that boys can't have the same issues, but I saw him. So this all happened on a Tuesday. I saw him on Tuesday morning before I went to work. He said, Mom, I filled out the application to take the civil servant test to be a fireman. He had decided not to go to college. He didn't want to, but he wanted to be a fireman. If this civil servant test didn't work out, he was going in August. Great Oaks or one of the Oaks has a fireman program. So he said, Mom, I stayed up to take, you know, to sign up to take the test. I'm like, oh my gosh, buddy, that's just great, you know. And then I bebop off to work. I call him or send him a message and say, hey, I forgot something at home. Could you bring it to me? He's like, yeah, Mom, I'll bring it to you. You know, you can hear the tone in the text, right? So he brought it to me. I saw him. He was fine. This was like at 1:30, and by 4:20, I'm getting a phone call from my daughter who was work from home. You have to come home right away. And so that began like the 4 worst days of my life.
Yeah.
And again, like he had lunch with her that day after he left me. Hmm. No one knew. No one knew anything. Then, you know, you're waiting, and I actually got to our house before the ambulance did.
You're a very fast driver.
No, it was, we live less than a mile away, but I got there before the ambulance did. And, I had hope he was breathing. I had hope. I did. And I've never spoken to the police or the firemen, but I think that they knew when they came in because they quickly ushered us out and he was air cared to UC. And then, you know, that became 4 days of staying. They told us within probably 20 minutes of our getting to UC that there was no chance and asked us if we wanted to donate organs. And we both immediately said we did. And, you know, that's another whole story. We got down there and they wouldn't let my daughters come in because of COVID.
Oh, my gosh.
My two girls had to sit in the parking garage in their car while we went inside and were ushered into this small little room waiting for a doctor to come talk to us. And then the doctor comes in and tells us, and then a social worker comes in and she's like, do you want me to go tell your daughters? And I'm like, no, you can't go. I have to go tell my daughters. So then we had to walk out and tell our daughters this. And, you know, and then finally they were allowed to come in when we went upstairs to the neuro ICU. And again, they tried to like kick us out during the day because of COVID rules and stuff. And we're like, we're not leaving. You've already told us that there's no hope. We're staying as long as we can be with him. But that was a struggle too, you know, it just, but, and that's the whole COVID issue part of it all, but.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you, earlier you said that you had hope that he was breathing, did Chelsea tell you on the phone anything or did she?
No, she was actually, it was his phone that called me.
Okay.
So I thought it was him calling me, which was very odd. He never calls, you know, kids today, they just text. So I was getting a phone call from him. I think I even asked her and said, hey, buddy, you know, what's going on? She was on her phone with 911 at the same time she was calling me from his phone. And so, yeah, she was like, just basically telling me he was hurt. And so I stayed on the phone with her the whole time driving, obviously. And the whole time she's still talking to 911. And then I got there and like was just frantic. Like like I'm sitting with him and I'm telling her she has to go watch for the ambulance to come and direct them where to go. And, you know, but like I said, he was breathing. So I felt there was hope. Like the whole car ride to the hospital, I'm thinking, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. He's breathing. We're, you know, we're going to be fine. It's, you know, whatever's going on, we're going to be fine. And when they put us in that little room, you just know that it's not going to be fine.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. You just know it's not. So.
Now, in your son's memory, you started a foundation, right?
We did. So immediately sitting at the hospital, I know that not all of my family felt this way, but my daughter and I kind of looked at each other and said, we can't be quiet about this. Because if we are quiet about this, we're not going to help anyone. And at the time, we could have kind of flipped the narrative and said whatever we wanted. You know, it was, he was out of school, so it wasn't like, you know, even though there was a ton of stuff, rumors and stuff going on, obviously, you know how kids are. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't be quiet. I had to be honest. And I did have all of those fears of how people were going to look at me. I remember going to a football game at the high school to support some friends whose seniors were graduating. And it was their senior night game. And I remember just like feeling like everybody there was staring at me. Like everybody is, how can she be here? How can she be sitting here after what happened to her son? What kind of a parent is she that this happened? This would never happen to my child, you know, because I'm a much better parent. You know, this and I understand these are all the things that I put on myself, but you have to know that that's what other people were thinking, even if they didn't want to be thinking it, because it's just human nature. You know, you think, I would have told you in a million years this would never happen to Ben. And I remember sitting at the hospital wanting to hold up his picture, his football picture, his lacrosse picture, and be like, do you see this kid? Not this kid. Not in a million years, this kid. I could have named 20 other kids in his class. that if you told me something mentally was going on with them, I would have been like, oh, that doesn't really surprise me. I would have kind of suspected, I sensed that they had issues.
Right.
Never. His friends never would have, you know, I've spoken to them. They're having the same struggles that I have. Like, looking back, what did they miss? They're like, how did they not see it? Coaches, how did we not see it? You know? So that is encouraging to me somewhat as a parent, because I know that I'm not the only one who missed it, right? If there was something to miss. But that's still frustrating too, because your child suffered in silence. Sorry.
Oh, you're fine. Well, I think what's interesting too is the stigma that this entire podcast, the goal is to break that up. And that stigma that you felt when you went to that game or to the basketball court, that's exactly the stigma we're talking about. So what do you wish you could tell those parents?
I just want to tell them it can happen to you. It doesn't matter that you've been with your husband since you were 15 years old. It doesn't matter that, you know, you've supported your children through everything they've been through and you've gone to every event. Ben would have told you we were overly involved. He would have said, please don't come, you know. I know he wouldn't have meant that, but he would have said it, you know. It can still happen to you. Your kid can still be, you know, I wouldn't say, like, he wasn't going out to parties and stuff. It just wasn't his scene. But he was definitely, his friends would say he was in the popular group. He was an athlete. He got along well with everybody. He was respected by his peers. It can happen to anybody. You just don't know what someone's going through.
So you made that decision to do something.
Yes.
Now, what is that something? What is the foundation doing?
So first and foremost, we didn't want his name to be forgotten for very selfish reasons. Obviously you're mom and dad, and you want his name to live on. And how's that going to happen? So we decided to give out scholarships at Loveland High School. The first year we committed to give $1,000, and we ended up giving out $2,500.
Okay, cool.
So we gave a scholarship. Basically, we gave a $1,000 scholarship to one of the boys, and then we gave $500 to each of the others that applied.
Oh, cool.
Their essay had to be written about Ben, and it was very difficult to choose from them because it was all stories about Ben and all stories about how he helped them as underclassmen, how he was that person that made them feel welcome. And I'm sitting there reading them, sobbing, and I'm like, these kids are all getting money. They're just,
I'm sure I can imagine.
I felt like Oprah, you get money, you get money. So then it kind of became, so how do we raise money? Obviously, because you have to raise money to keep funding this. I'm not independently wealthy to fund it myself. So we had a golf outing. That was our first big event. It went over very well. Obviously, it was all people we knew, friends, you know. We had 52 golfers the first year. We did a few other events. We do a birthday event in February for his birthday, because I feel like I can't let that go, you know, especially in the February coming up. He'll be 21, and that's going to be really difficult, but we're going to have a big party. So that, and then we've had a second golf outing. We had 120 golfers this year.
Wow.
So we've really expanded and done well with that. And then it became, what more can we do? We need to get beyond the scholarships. This year we did give, gosh, I think we gave 5,500 in scholarships. We gave two $1,000 scholarships and then a bunch of 500 again because I couldn't say no. So we're going to continue the scholarships, obviously, but then it became, how else can we raise awareness? And so we started working with the high school's Hope Squad. We have made donations. There was a boy who needed some help on the lacrosse team. We bought his gear for him because to me, that's all part of mental health. You know, he needs to be able to feel like he's one of the team and can be part of this. And so we're exploring right now new avenues and things to do with Loveland High School. I'd love to expand it and do other high schools and spread out. Just trying to do it in baby steps and make things work. We had our first ever mental health awareness game. I don't think it's ever happened around here anyway.
And it was amazing.
We did it on a Friday night at football. It was Loveland versus Anderson. And it was a tremendous game. I was just so pleased with the support that everyone gave. There were teal and purple, which is the colors for suicide prevention, everywhere. The kids really embraced it. We had booths from different organizations, My Fave 5, the 988 Initiative set up, handing out things. The kids were very receptive. And they all knew that that's what we were there for. A lot of kids put his football number with eye black or whatever on their arms or their cheeks or mm-hmm. whatever. And mm-hmm. it was a joint event with both schools because mm-hmm. Anderson lost a student in 2021 as well, a senior at Anderson. And so we joined with his family and it was all done together and it was very nice.
No. Sorry, I was just going to say, for me as a therapist and a parent of two children that go to Loveland, sitting in the stands and listening to the statistics that were being mm-hmm. read was, it was just amazing.
And you know those statistics.
I do.
But it was still powerful to hear them.
It was, because sorry.
No, it's okay. Loveland really embraced the whole thing, mm-hmm. which was very nice. And I think that shows how far they've come along.
Mm-hmm.
They really embraced it. Our Hope Squad is the one who gave those statistics. And so in between little like timeouts and things like that, these statistics were read. They allowed us to come up at halftime and read kind of a thank you from both the families. Mm-hmm. It was really nice. Unfortunately, Anderson won the game.
Yeah, that wasn't fun.
And not Loveland, but we still gave them the trophy. So we had a trophy that had, it was a helmet, actually. It had both of the logos on it and had 988 on it. And this trophy will be passed back and forth next year. Whoever wins it will get the trophy. And the Anderson coaches and AD were right in there and, you know, telling the boys, you know, this is more than just a football game. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, you see these parents up here and this is what it's about. And mm-hmm. it was just really a powerful night. Mm-hmm. It really was.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You put a legacy, which is so important.
I hope so. And I hope we can expand it. I hope we can move on to other schools. I hope that next, you know, we're doing a mental health game at King's and I hope that we're, you know, mm-hmm. doing one at Anderson when it's there. And I hope we're doing it at Milford and I hope we're doing it wherever, mm-hmm. you know, because I think that's how, you know, we do breast cancer awareness games. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be doing mental health awareness games.
Absolutely. Now, how can someone get involved if they want to donate money or volunteer?
So we have a website. It's the BenMorrisonFund.org. You can go on there. You can donate via Venmo. One of the easiest ways to donate is we are part of the Kroger Plus Rewards program. So you can sign up to designate Ben Morrison Memorial as your organization. That costs you no money. You just go and shop like you normally do, and they give a percentage to us, and it comes in the form of a check every quarter. We've also signed up for Amazon Smiles. Again, another thing that costs you no money. You just go on and sign up and say that we're your organization and donate. We have many activities. Our website will tell you the things. We have a Power Ride event coming up at October 1st. We'll have his birthday event in February at Folling Warehouse, which is a ton of fun. So there'll be info with that. We'll do Cappy's here in town will do an event for us. That's awesome because everybody wants to go have a pint.
Who doesn't? And Cappy's exactly. is a great spot.
And Cappy's is a great spot. So they will do one anytime we want. They've been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
The owner, is just fabulous. And then we'll do the golf outing again. Mm-hmm. And I think those will be our main go-tos. You don't want to do too much. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to. But everybody has a different thing they like to do, you know, so you're going to get people come golf, but you're going to get a different group that will come to power ride, obviously. Right. And just for the record, I am not power riding. I will just be watching.
Casey will kick your butt. She really will. She's one of her young professionals. I went once. I'm like, I am never going to power ride again.
No, not me.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. Is there anything else you want to tell the parents or any students that's currently inside of Loveland or any other high school?
I guess I would just say to keep the conversations going, talk. Don't let your kids tell you they're fine. You know, I think, especially with a boy, you know, we just assume that they're going to be non-talkers. And so we allow it to happen. You know, his sisters talked constantly. I knew more than I needed to know. And so, you know, he didn't want to share things or talk about things, and which, again, I think is normal for a boy. But I think we have to break through that, and we have to make sure that they know that it's okay. And I say all this to you, and I did all of that, which is really, you know, but I would still tell you that's what you need to do. Like, I told him, I don't care if you work at UPS the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to college. I don't care if you pick up garbage. I don't care what you do, you know, just find your path. So again, like I said, I tell you this and I did it and it didn't matter, but I hope that for someone else, it maybe it will.